I think that everyone at some point in their life should work in a fast food or retail job. Not to improve their work ethic or anything, but so that everyone knows what it's like to have that kind of job. They wouldn't work in fast food their whole lives, maybe just like for 6 months, just so they get a feel for it. So with that, let's talk about the time when I worked in fast food. I used to work at a very small local sandwich shop. I don't know if any of you guys heard of it. It's called Subway. Our spokesperson was in the news recently. I don't know if you guys look at the news. Did you hear he got beat up in jail? I kind of want to meet the person who beat up Jared more than Jared. Not in person. We wouldn't meet in person, obviously. But, like, he would be behind bars, and I would just look at the guy who beat up my spokesperson. How many people get to say that they beat up a fast food icon who is also a pedophile? Only one, and it's that guy. Okay, but seriously, guys, working at Subway was probably one of the most easiest jobs out there. I don't know why I'm about to complain about it to you guys. We got free cookies. And you know the comic with the Subways in Hell? I was actually working at Subway when I made that comic. I just think it adds sort of a little bit of value to it. You see, the owners, who are husband and wife, can you believe it, of the Subway I worked at owned two stores. One of the Subway stores was in a Walmart on an Indian reservation, because we have those in Arizona, and the other Subway was the Subway I worked at. And since the Walmart store was always busy, the owners would spend 99% of their time at that store. So I didn't really have a boss most of the time. On the off chance the owners did show up, they would just pick up some food and then they would make sure I was making sandwiches the right way. And every time I made a sandwich in front of them, they would always find something wrong with it, without fail. You put on too many olives. Do you know according to the Subway formula, you're only supposed to put on 8 olives on a foot long? 8! One for every other bite. That's just ridiculous. Can you imagine someone just counting out 8 olives? Nobody does that. I usually worked the closing shift, and at the end of the night, we would turn the alarm and we have 60 seconds to get out of the store. But one time I had the opening shift, so I unlocked the door to get in with my key, and the alarm went beep, beep. Meaning I had 60 seconds to turn it off. No big deal, right? I've turned the alarm on all the time when I was closing. So I go to the little control panel, and I type in the code, and nothing happens. The beeping is still there, and the clock is still ticking down. So I go, okay, I'm going to press each button very carefully. I'm going to make sure each button makes a beep when I press it. Beep, beep, beep. Nothing still happens. So I go, okay, I'm going to make sure to press each button very carefully. And I start thinking, did they change the passcode without telling me? Well, this is the only passcode I know, so we're just going to try it again. And I press each button very carefully. Beep. 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 And it goes quiet. And then the alarm goes off. I still had like 20 seconds left. But I guess when you get it wrong 3 times, it automatically assumes that you're a burglar. So while the alarm is going off, I look on the contact sheet for the owner's cell phone number. I step outside, I call him, and he doesn't pick up. So I go back inside, find the number for the other Subway store. They open an hour before we do. Someone picks up with their stupid voice, "Oh, thank you for calling Subway. I'm blah 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 blah. How may I help you?" And I go, "Hey, is Mike there?" That's not his real name, guys. Don't worry. And they go, "Just a minute." "Yeah, sure. I have all the time in the world. The cops might be on their way, but take your time." So, Mike picks up. "Yellow." "Hey, Mike, this is James. What's the passcode for the alarm?" "Who is this?" "It's James. What's the passcode?" "What are you doing there, James? Why aren't you answering the question?" "I have the opening shift." "Is the alarm going off?" "Yeah, no one told me the new code." "Yeah, we changed it. It's the last 4 digits of your social security number." "Oh, okay, thanks, Mike." I don't know my social security number. So I finally get the alarm off. No one showed up, thankfully. Which, I actually don't know if that's a good thing or not, now that I say it out loud. We did have a store manager who would, like, make the schedule and sometimes tell us, "Hey, can you guys do a better job at your job?" But other than that, she was cool. She watches my videos, and so do her little brothers. They're big fans. Shout out to Ivan and Andy. Those are the brothers. So get this. At Subway, you only work with one other person. Just you and them in an empty Subway for 5 hours. I mean, we weren't, like, empty all the time. Okay. And when you're not making sandwiches, you have other stuff to do, like stocking the chips, or we had stuff to do. But okay, we did watch a lot of Netflix and do homework, so I mean, it was that other person you worked with would make or break your entire shift. It wasn't the annoying customers. I kind of got used to annoying customers. So I worked with a lot of crappy people. And I also worked with a lot of people who I would probably never become friends with except in a work setting. You see, you gotta understand the type of people who got jobs at Subway. potheads. Most of them are potheads. And some of them are really cool. I'm just going to go over a couple of the characters that I worked with. There was Tyler. I freaking love this guy. He smoked a lot of weed. He actually taught me what vaping was, and he got me into Clash of Clans. I actually mentioned him and his girlfriend in my riddles video. I don't know if I ever told him that. And of course, I have to mention Corey. He was cool. We watched How to Get Away with Murder on Netflix, and I've also hung out with him outside of work. What him and Tyler had in common is that they would actually do their job, which you gotta appreciate. Then there was this guy. Get this, who was also named Jared. He loved Marvel, and that's like the only thing he would talk about. I can say these things. He doesn't watch my videos. There was Sarah. She was cool. She made me a bread bowl. And her boyfriend, Jay. He talked about chakras and third eyes. He was interesting. And also, there's Anthony. He's cool. What's up, Anthony? For the 100,000 sprinkles video, I actually went back to Subway to use their scale because I knew they had one. And we counted 500 sprinkles again just to be more accurate for the 100,000. And Anthony helped me count. Instead of working. I mean, at least he got paid minimum wage for it. So two more stories before I go. One time, Jared asked me to take out this pile of trash, and I was like, oh, okay, I'll just put this pile of trash in the dumpster. And as I was taking it out, I saw that there was a chip poster in the pile, and I thought, this is too cool to throw away. I'm gonna keep it. So I took it home with me, and then the next day when I went in, people were saying, oh, where's the chip poster? We can't find the chip poster. We haven't seen it anywhere. And I'm thinking, I have the poster. I decided not to tell anyone that I had the poster, and it's still hanging up in my room. Sorry, boss, if you're finding out about this now. Okay, and then the other story. I was working with a manager, and we were just making sandwiches like usual, and I noticed that when we toasted a sandwich, it would burn the paper a little on the edges. That probably shouldn't be happening. So then a customer asks for just bacon toasted, and the boss lady puts some bacon on paper and then puts it in the toaster. And we don't have a setting for just bacon. So then when she opens the toaster, there was a fire on the bacon. So then she starts to whack it with the little metal tray thing, but all she ended up doing was fanning the flames, making the fire bigger. You got this, right? Then I went in the back and I got the fire extinguisher and I actually used it. I single-handedly saved that Subway. Wait, what have I done? Is it okay if the bacon's a little crispy and has nitrogen and carbon dioxide stuff on it? Hey, this is kind of like a part two video. I mean, you don't have to have seen the part one video to understand what I talk about in this video. But I mean, if you haven't watched part one, you should. So I used to work at Subway, and to be honest, about 80% of the customers were fine. Sometimes they would do something that would just personally annoy me, like ask for a meatball on flatbread. So don't feel too bad for me. Like sometimes people would ask me, can I have a turkey with lettuce, tomatoes? Whoa, slow down! What kind of bread? Foot long or 6 inch? What kind of cheese? Is it toasted? Then we'll talk about vegetables! And every time someone brought in a list, there would always be something missing on it. Always! I never had someone come in with a complete list. I would ask someone, what kind of cheese? And they would say, they didn't specify. Well then, if they didn't care enough to remember cheese, I guess they'll get Swiss. If anyone watching is currently working at a Subway, then feel free to use these tricks. If someone asked me,
what kind of cheese do you recommend?
I would always say provolone, because it's the easiest cheese to pull apart with gloves on. Really, if anyone asked me what I recommended, I would just tell them the easiest thing for me to do. But even after I gave my insightful provolone cheese recommendation, sometimes people would still say,
I'll take American.
Why do you even ask me what cheese I would recommend if you're not going to take it seriously? Another thing that would annoy me is when people would say the sandwich was all done, but they didn't put any sauce on it. So I would ask, any sauce? And then they would be like, oh yeah, mayonnaise. Oh, why did you tell me it was all done if it wasn't? Also, the receipt machine at the store took like 7 seconds to print out the receipt. So it would be very awkward every time I would ask people, do you want your receipt? And then they would say yes, and then we would just stare at each other until the receipt printed. So what I did every time someone swiped their credit card, I would just stare off into space, and in my head, I would count to 5. And then I would ask, do you want your receipt? And by the time they said yes, it was like magic. As soon as they said yes, the receipt printed. At Subway, you only work with one other person. So if someone got annoyed and said, let me talk to your manager, I would just look at them and go, listen, I've been here the longest. The only other person in this store is a 16-year-old girl, and she technically isn't old enough to use a toaster, so I'm probably your best bet. I'm the manager. Like, do people think the manager will automatically take their side and give them free stuff? Yes, actually they do think that because it happens all the time. I would consider myself a pretty laid-back Subway employee. I didn't like to be stingy with people, even though I was disobeying the Subway formula on purpose. Oh, you want more than 6 olives on your foot long? Sure. Here, have a 5th slice of cheese. $1.50 for avocado. I'll charge you 75 cents, buddy. I probably shouldn't be saying these things, you know, in case this whole YouTube thing flops and I need a job. So I wasn't really strict on the rules. You know those fast food workers who are strict? No, we won't serve breakfast at 10:02. Get out. But being pretty laid back still didn't stop people from being annoying. So this one person comes in and asks for 2-foot-long pastrami sandwiches. And pastrami is our most expensive sandwich. It's about $10 for a foot-long. And guys, the pastrami is super good. But I wouldn't pay for it. I mean, it's good, yeah, but I'm not paying $10 for a foot long. It's not worth it. So this guy, I make his 2 sandwiches, I ring him up, and I say, that'll be $20. And I guess he didn't look at the price of the sandwich on the menu, or he thought we still did the $5 foot longs, because he said to me, I ain't paying for that. And this is when I was just starting out. I only had like a week of experience. And after he said that, I responded, well, shoot. I guess you're not paying for it. I didn't know people could do that. Hey, I want this. All right, that's $20. Nah, you don't want it? No, I want it. I'm just not paying for it. Okay, no, but actually, we did come up with a compromise. He told me that he had $12, so he ended up paying for one of the sandwiches, and I got to eat the other one. So it all worked out. This one time I was making a sandwich for a guy with a very heavy accent, and he asks for onions on the side. No big deal. We at Subway put vegetables in little cups all the time. I actually got a soup cup because the on the side cups are teeny tiny, and I start doing my thing, but then he says, no, on the side. And I think, oh, he's getting a foot long. He probably wants onions on half of it, but not the other. So I start putting onions on half the sub, but then again he says, no, on the side. At this point, I don't know what this guy wants. So I ask him, on the side of what? And then he screams, onions! And I never figured out what he was trying to say. This one old gentleman asks for sauce to be put on his vegetables, and normally we put it on top of the sandwich with the meat. And I didn't know if I heard him correctly because I put the sauce on and then I closed the sandwich. So your sauce would have been in the same place either way. One time this woman tipped me and Corey $40. She wasn't annoying, I just want to sprinkle in some good customer stories. Okay, one time this, Native American person came in, and I don't know if mentioning that was important to the story. He comes in and asks for 5-foot-long tunas. Okay, Tyler, just me and you, let's do this! And then when we're all finished, we ring him up and we say, anything else? And he says, 7 meatballs. What? He wanted 7 more sandwiches. But James, you're Subway. You're supposed to make people sandwiches regardless of how many they ask for. Yeah, I know, but the guy could have handled it differently. Normally for a platter, you have to call in at least an hour ahead, and that's only 5-foot-longs. This guy could have called ahead and said, hey, I'm getting 12 sandwiches, so just prepare yourselves. Mentally. I mean, we had so many customers waiting in line. No, we didn't. That's a lie. It was only him. But still, this one woman, I was making her sandwich, and for vegetables, she asked for extra lettuce. So I put on a big handful, but then she asks for more. So I put more on, more, and sprinkle some on, more! I won't be able to close the sandwich with any more lettuce. And she says, that's fine. Alright, extra lettuce it is. So I ended up giving her an open sandwich with a mountain of lettuce. You know we do salads, right? When I was little, I always thought if I was working at a store and someone tried to rob me, I wouldn't give them any money. But now it's like, psh, I ain't risking my life for Subway. Here, take the cash register. So thankfully I've never had anyone pull a gun on me, but I have caught people stealing from us. I was making someone's sandwich and this one kid asks for just a water cup, so I gave it to him. So I go back to making a sandwich and I just hear the fuzzy soda sounds being dispensed. And I look over, and the kid is putting soda in the cup. He didn't even try to hide it. When I put soda in a water cup, I at least wait for the employees to go in the back, but I didn't even say anything. I was just like, all right, man. This guy, I totally saw him take a bag of chips, and he hid it under the counter so I couldn't see. So when I rang up his sandwich, I asked, anything else? And he said, nope. Alright, whatever. Okay, last story. I was in the back, and I was playing some Clash of Clans, and we have a computer that shows what the cameras see, and I see this woman who was eating there. She reached over the counter and took 3 large cups, and I did nothing to stop it. You know, I'm the kind of person that's like, the fast food employee is always right. Say if I was eating somewhere, and I asked for a chicken salad, and they said, we only have tuna salad. I'm the kind of person that's like, oh, well, I guess I'm having the tuna salad then. Hey man, have you ever noticed that we wear the exact same clothes every day? We don't wear any clothes. What if we're both just a cartoon character, and that's why our clothing's the same? That's impossible. Cartoon characters' mouths move. We just open our mouths and words start coming out. Hey guys, did you see my brand new Rolex? Are you jealous? Doesn't your phone tell the time? Maybe he never noticed that his phone has a clock in it. No one buys a Rolex to tell the time. I can't even read this. People buy Rolexes to indirectly tell everyone how much money we can throw away on useless objects. Hey, look what my watch can do. Ring, ring. Hello? You'll never believe what Brian just bought. What'd he buy? A watch. Really? What a nerd. Oh, Brian. I'm the kind of person who doesn't really care about my outward appearance. A lot of times in high school, we talk about having a healthy self-image of ourselves, and teachers would say stuff like, "Don't listen to the people who call you ugly. You're beautiful." And all I could think was, there's people saying I'm ugly? For the most part, I haven't really tried to even learn anything about fashion. Most of the time when I get dressed in the morning, I wear just whatever's the cleanest. Like, I don't even know my pant size because I wear basketball shorts all the time. I think I'm a medium. My parents taught me the value of hard work by making me pay for all my clothes, and I am 100% on board with that parenting technique. I think even the super, super rich parents should still make their kids buy their own clothes. Because if you just buy your child anything they want, then they're going to turn into a-holes who just expect everything without having to work hard. Those are the types of kids who grow up to flex all their money on people and who leave their basketball cards all over the cramped dorm. And also, buying your own clothes makes you think harder about what you're going to spend your precious dollars on. You don't want to waste your money, so you have to pick clothes you really like. Except, my mom told me I couldn't buy anything with skulls on them. She said they were too edgy. And you know what? Fair enough, Mom. Looking back, I'm glad I skipped that emo edgy phase. But why didn't you let me express my true self, Mom?
Thank you for not letting me do that.
In the 7th grade, I went through an I need to look cool phase. And one time, I saved up quite a bit of money, so me and my mom went on a shopping spree at Kohl's. Hashtag not sponsored. I was going to impress everyone. I was going to look so cool with my brand new 2 pairs of jeans. I'll get this normal blue pair, and then the exact same pair, just in case I spill ketchup on the first pair. That's another reason why I'm pro have your kids pay for their own clothes. So that way they learn how expensive clothes shopping is. Seriously, 2 pairs of jeans was $70. Do you know how many Pokemon cards I could have bought? Probably enough to make my own pair of PokePants. And that's when I learned about the magical land of Goodwill. At Goodwill, you could buy mediocre, questionably stained-looking jeans for a fourth of the price of Kohl's. And since I had to buy all my clothes, and I was unemployed, I was at Goodwill every other Saturday for that half-off deal. You're at Goodwill, and everything's half-off. That's like a double sale, people. Here's the thing. Typically, clothes stores have a certain style they specialize in. Tilly's, you know you're gonna get that hip LA-style clothes. At Old Navy, you know you're gonna get that white boy Ohio look. And H&M, you know you're gonna get demonetized. But when you step inside your local Goodwill, you don't know what you're getting. You get every style of clothing all in one place. I got my favorite t-shirt from Goodwill. I even wore it to this panel at VidCon. You know, the panel where I didn't even talk into the microphone, so you couldn't hear half the words I said.
Ah, but James, I don't want to wear clothes that have already been worn by other people. They are gross. Ugh, cuties and herpes.
Ugh. Yeah, no, that's true, that's true. You don't know who else has worn your clothing. But then again, you could be wearing something that was also worn by the odd ones out. Yeah, that's right. I donate my clothes to Goodwill. Reduce, reuse, recycle, baby. Why would someone make a pair of pants out of Pokemon cards and give it away? I'm not saying don't buy expensive clothing. Buy whatever you want to buy and can't afford. If there's 2 shirts, one is $40 and one is $5, and you really, really like the $40 shirt and hate the $5 one, you should get the $40 shirt because you'll end up wearing it more often, so you get more use out of it. In economics, there's a term used to measure how much happiness a product will give you, and it's called utils. Sometimes buying more expensive things will give you more utils of happiness, so it's worth it to buy expensive clothing. But, for me, I get way more utils buying a shirt for $5. You cannot put a price on all the oodles and oodles of utils I get for wearing a shirt I like for $5. You can wear your Supremes and your Abercrombos or whatever all you want. I just don't think it makes a lot of sense spending that much money on a white t-shirt with an ironed-on logo. There's no material in that shirt that makes it as expensive as it is. Oh, never mind. What you're really doing is paying for the name brand. So you might as well staple 2 $20 bills to your shirt and write in Sharpie, "Look everyone, I got $40. But again, if you like the design of a white shirt and a red rectangle, then you be happy wearing it. I'm not telling you what to wear. But I will tell you this. Don't judge someone based on their clothing. That's like the most shallow thing a person can do. Even if someone is wearing old hand-me-downs or a really expensive name-brand t-shirt, don't treat people differently because of their clothing. There's a certain YouTuber going around, I'm not going to say any names, but I will draw pictures, who's teaching kids that their value as a person is correlated to the amount of money they spend on clothing. Don't do that. Okay, real talk over now. School uniforms! People who support school uniforms say that uniforms are better because then the students don't have to think about what they're going to wear the next day because everyone has to wear the same outfit. But like, I already don't think about what I'm wearing. That's probably why I'm naked right now. Okay, that's not entirely true. I'm not just going to walk outside wearing a pink poncho. I have standards. I just buy all the cheap clothing I think looks nice. In high school, I mostly wore solid color V-neck t-shirts, and one time a kid on the very last day of school told me, James, you always wear solid color V-neck t-shirts. You're like a cartoon character. That's what I'm going for. I've always wanted to be a cartoon. I don't think you realize how much I love cartoons. One time I bought those shoes with the really fat tongues. I thought they looked cool, but they certainly didn't feel cool. They didn't have any support for my soul. I couldn't go running in them, so what was even the point? And apparently you're not supposed to tie the laces of those shoes. I'm not sure. Someone just told me, hey man, you know you're not supposed to tie the laces of those shoes, right? So I had to bury the laces inside my shoe, and I was constantly stepping on the sharp aglets! And all the cool kids saw my shoes and said, hey James, those are some pretty fat tongues you got there. Do you want to come sit at our lunch table? And I said, no, being cool sucks! So now I wear tennis shoes everywhere. Some of you watching are in 7th or 8th grade right now, and you might be going through your own I need to look cool phase. And I just want to say to you little youngins, you don't need to impress or prove yourself to anyone. Wear whatever makes you happy, and that you can afford. And you still have to follow the school's dress code, which is a whole other can of worms. I'm not encouraging anyone to break the rules, okay? All I'm saying is, at the end of the day, what really matters is that you're in 7th grade. Nothing you do will make you cool. I'm sorry. Everyone regrets 7th grade, okay? Just start putting on deodorant, do the homework, you'll get through this.
Hello everyone, it's me, James. I just wanted to let you know that I'm launching this card game called Cafe Chaos on Kickstarter today. There'll be more info at the end of the video. This isn't some bit. I actually made a card game and I worked really hard on it, so please click the link in the description to get your...
My name's Joe Exotic. I exploit dangerous wild animals for profit, and that's only the least reprehensible thing I've done. In this 8-part docuseries, I'll show you the bad, the horrible, and downright disgusting aspects of what it's like to be a polyamorous, meth-addicted Tiger King. I'm the real Pokemon Master, you hear?
And just like that, by watching other garbage humans on his television, James felt ever so slightly at peace while the world crumbled around him. For the first time in months, James smiled.
I'll be real with you, being in quarantine has sucked a lot. I miss hanging out with friends, I miss going to non-essential businesses, and I miss wiping my butt with toilet paper instead of my dog. All I've had for company has been Floof and my own mind. So it's been a little hard to stay motivated during this time. But if staying home instead of going to Disneyland will save people's lives, then I guess I'll have to make that sacrifice. It's so hard to be a good person. Some of the things that have been helping me mentally has been exercise, a positive mindset, and garbage television. I used to think that garbage television was stupid and a waste of my mortal existence. But as I started watching more garbage, I realized that I've already been fascinated and enjoyed watching garbage content for years. Have you seen the videos I make? I've said this in my conspiracy video, that I love watching crazy people talk for hours. Now take those same people, give them a camera crew and a budget, and you got a brand new show on TLC. What's that? You've never heard of TLC, the learning channel? Well, TLC is full of wonderful programs and documentaries that'll teach you if you become trashy enough, you'll end up on TV. And that's what schools should be teaching. No, this video isn't sponsored by TLC, but if they wanted to sponsor me, I'd say no. I just want to be on an episode of My Strange Addiction. I'll tell you what the addiction is later, TLC. One show I've been unhealthily binging is called 90 Day Fiancé. It's about when a boy meets a girl, or a girl meets a girl, or a man meets a much younger girl online, and they sort of like each other, but they're from different countries, so when they meet each other, they have 90 days to decide if they want to get married before their visa expires. It's great that the internet exists so that these clearly desperate people in different countries even have the chance to form a relationship. And it's equally great that the internet exists so we can watch very personal moments of these strangers' lives. The show really shines with the most garbage of couples. I've seen other YouTubers talk about this one specific couple, Big Ed and Rose. I don't want to make fun of Big Ed's appearance, but let's just say he saves a lot of money on scarves. And turtle necks. He's a 54-year-old pursuing a relationship and wanting to marry a 23-year-old Filipino woman named Rose. And Ed has a daughter that's 6 years older than Rose. And he's older than Rose's father. Can you imagine for a second if your mom was 6 years younger than you? And on top of that, Ed is a huge liar. He lied about his height. He lied about wanting to have kids with her. He's also really mean to Rose. I mean, sure, he's old enough to be her father, so he's probably used to talking down to young people. And a dad telling their kids that their legs are hairy and their breath stinks is justifiable. But this is his girlfriend. At least make her a bag lunch first. Even if I thought Big Ed was the best guy in the world, do I think a relationship could work between people with a 31-year age gap?
Well, let's take a look at the math. Here is the half your age plus 7 rule graphed out. So if you're 30, then it's socially acceptable to be dating someone who's 22. Now, obviously this graph isn't set in stone. But for reference, here's Big Ed's age versus Rose's age. So when Ed was 40 and taking care of his 15-year-old daughter, Rose was 9.
So do I think an age gap of 31 can work? Well, mathematically and common sense speaking, not until Ed is 76 and Rose is 45. I think that'll take longer than 90 days, though. The second and third reason I love this show is David and Lana. I haven't seen any YouTubers talk about this couple, but they need to. Meet David, a 60-year-old guy from Vegas who's fallen head over wallet for a Ukrainian woman named Lana. He spent 7 years and a quarter of a million US dollars on a relationship where he hasn't even met the other person. He's tried to meet up with Lana on 3 separate occasions already, but got stood up every single time. Now he's putting all of his credit cards on the table and is willing to risk it all on a fourth trip to the Ukraine to meet his soon-to-be mail order...
Наречена.
Who doesn't speak English. Long story short, they meet after 13 episodes, David gives her a brand new iPhone X to text him on, only for him to get eternally ghosted because her nails were too long to text him back. Let me remind you that they were in contact for 7 years. That's how old Rose was when Ed was 38. Me briefly describing these two's relationship just now was so much of an emotional roller coaster that I don't even need to go back to theme parks anymore. It makes me want to puke, and I hope you can see why I love this show so much. I know that reality TV is fake, and who knows if this entire relationship was scripted and manufactured for the show, but I don't care if it's fake. This smile is real. Watching garbage television all day isn't as fun or healthy as it may seem, believe it or not. Even though I spent a good portion of this video hyping up trash TV, you should also be doing something productive. Like watching YouTube videos. To compensate for all the garbage I watch, I've been exercising more. Right when the pandemic began its exponential spike, I bought a home gym machine and I've been working out 3 times a week with my friend DJ. DJ and I met because we're both friends with Alan Becker, who makes these animations versus animator videos, and one day I noticed that DJ's muscles were a lot like one of my Japanese animes. He was a walking, breathing protagonist that my body dysmorphia had been holding me back from becoming. I reached my skinny hands out to DJ and said, "Hey DJ, can we work out together?"
So this is where I put the iPad to talk to DJ.
Oh, hey James.
This is where I got the treadmill, the weights, and this is my favorite piece of equipment, this rag up here so I don't bump my head when I do pull-ups. This is where I keep my air conditioner because it gets very hot in this garage. This is what it used to look like a month ago. Anyway,
the reason I started working out more seriously was because people were calling me skinny and other slanderous synonyms like slender and scrawny, and I told my friends that I was hurt by these comments, but they all unanimously agreed that it's true, I am a slim Jim. It's important to have a reason for working out. Mine is self-loathing. DJ is forcing me to push myself. We've only been going for about 3 months, or a whole 90-day fiancé, and I've already gone from struggling to lift up this much weight to struggling to lift up this much weight. Sorry if I'm flexing too much on you. I'm just proud of my progress. The point is, while trash TV is fun, remember to mix in some productive activities during the day. For example, exercise. You don't need equipment. Do 10 push-ups right now, loser. Clean up after yourself. During these hard times, keeping your space organized and tidy will be a big boost on your mental health. Wear a face mask if you need to go out. Learn how to cook. You should also be eating healthy, too. Stop eating so many bagel bites. Watch parkour fails. Remind yourself how safe you are inside. These guys could get COVID and a broken tooth. Wear a face mask if you need to go out. Shave your head. Who cares anymore? Watch competitive sports fishing and get your blood pressure to rise so much that you feel pressured into working out again. And oh my god, how big is that fish? Oh my god, it's a 1,200-pound bull shark! They need 7 people to pull it on the boat and oh my god, is that Big Ed?
Okay, class. Spell Wednesday. I don't know how to spell Wednesday. Well, James, just sound it out. Oh, okay. So, like this?
No, James, it's Wednesday.
You said sound it out, and that's how you sound it out.
Ha ha ha! You think you have it bad? Do is spelt with an X.
I think it comes to no surprise that I'm terrible at spelling. I feel like everyone in life falls into two categories. Either you're good at math and bad at reading, or you're weird. And if you've seen my other videos, you know that I'm a math boy. My mom told me that I have dyslexia because she has dyslexia and I have all the symptoms, but we never got that diagnosed by a doctor, so... You can't make me take my meds, Mom! A lot of times what I do to cover up the fact that I spell lower than a first grade level is I will purposely misspell words to the point where it's obviously a joke. You thought I was doing that to be funny, but it's actually because I have zero self-confidence in my spelling and I don't want anyone to point out my mistakes. I mentioned this in a different video, but in elementary school, I was put into an honors program and everyone had to take spelling tests a grade ahead of their level. And by everyone, I mean everyone except me, because I failed every single spelling test. So I had to take spelling tests that were on level. Ew. Every week when we took a spelling test, I would have to move to the back of the classroom, and the teacher would stand right next to me. She'd call out everyone else's word, which had like 8 syllables, like anti-disestablishmentarianism, and then she'd turn to me and give me my on-level word. James, your word is cat. Also, 1 year, our class did a spelling bee, and everyone had to participate, and like, I didn't even care that I was the first one out. Hey, that's almost my name. Another thing that I mentioned in a pretty old video is that I used to have a speech impediment when I was little. I couldn't pronounce my Oz and I talked like this. I'm good now.
Obviously.
So every other day during school, I had to go to a speech therapy class, and one day the teacher who taught me how to pronounce my Oz, I'll call her Mrs. Kool-Aid, gave me this sheet of paper with a bunch of raindrops on it, and she said, "For every raindrop on this page, say the word raindrop." But then she just left the room, and I said, huh, well, I'm not gonna do this. I didn't say raindrop a single time, because, like, no one was even there. No one would have seen me not saying raindrop, so why would I do something that I didn't want to do? But then, the funny part is, when she came back, she asked, "Are you finished saying your raindrops?"
No.
Well, how many did you say?
I didn't say any.
You stupid child.
I told her the truth for some reason. I don't know why. It was probably the easiest lie in my life to get away with, but that's why I remember this story. I'm still mad at myself for telling the truth. And I had to say raindrop a bunch of times in front of her, and she would only go to the next raindrop until I said it right, and it was terrible. It really hurt my feelings. Since I was struggling with reading and spelling, I had to get an IEP. An incredible, excellent personality, which meant I had to go to a special class for a little bit during school, and the teacher who taught this class was none other than Mrs. Kool-Aid. Oh yeah. I don't know why I said it like that. I don't remember anyone ever telling me I was put into a special needs class. I just remember going into speech therapy every other day, and then those classes slowly morphed into teaching me how to read and spell. I don't know, I thought reading this book would have helped me talk better. 2 other kids were in the reading class with me, and I remember the day when reading for me just clicked. Us 3 were given a simple sentence to read. It was about bees. It was so simple. It was literally just, "To defend their hive from wasps, bees don't sting the wasp. Instead, they all crowd around the wasp and flap their wings to raise their body temperature, heating up the wasp until it dies." And then Mrs. Kool-Aid asked us, "Okay, how do bees defend against wasps?" And the other 2 kids said, "They sting them." And I said, What? No, you moans! Didn't you weed this?
The words on this paper have meaning when placed in a certain order to convey information. Also, I never want to get hugged by a bee.
So I was in these classes all the way until the sixth grade. I was getting better at reading. I still wasn't great, but I was getting better at it. And one day, Mrs. Kool-Aid said, "You know, James, you should try competing in the Battle of the Books."
Battle of the Books? Battle of the Books?
Battle of the Books!
Finally, reading sounds fun!
At my school, Battle of the Books was this competition where students were given a list of 4 books to read within a time limit of, like, 2 months. I don't remember how long it was. And after however many months it was, the contestants would sit in an auditorium and take turns answering questions about the books. And whoever got the most questions right would get a pizza party. And that's where the battle part comes in. We'd kill each other for pizza. And then there were 2 more rounds, each with 4 more books, so there was a total of 12 books you had to read. And we were allowed to be with a partner, so my partner was TJ.
Hey, TJ, do you remember Battle of the Books?
Yeah, man, it was great.
Now, you're probably thinking that 4 books in 2 months isn't that hard, especially since they're kids' books. But as someone who didn't read any books on my own outside of school, it was a challenge.
But I discovered a way to cheat the system. I discovered something called audiobooks.
Instead of having to sit still and read the book, I could just have someone read the book to me. And I would get through the book so much faster. I'd be able to read a book in about 8 hours as opposed to reading a book never, because I would never be able to finish a book on my own. And I was actually able to understand what was going on. I legitimately thought that listening to audiobooks was cheating because of how well it worked. So I never told anyone my secret. Until just now. Please don't tell anyone. Also, I didn't just turn on an audiobook and start playing video games. No, I sat in my bed next to the CD player and followed along with the book, and sometimes I even took notes. I've wanted to talk about my love for audiobooks for so long, but I can't, because then people will think I'm getting paid by a certain company, but I'm not, and I'll prove it. Instead of wasting your money on quality audiobooks made by professionals, you guys should all check out LibriVox.org, where you can listen to free public domain audiobooks, which means there's only old-timey classical books on it, like Aesop's Fables, which, in my opinion, is all you need. Anyway, TJ and I did the Battle of the Books, and for one of the rounds, TJ was sick, so I had to answer the questions all by myself, and I never forgave him for that. And also, the whole time, I was keeping track of everyone's points, and me and TJ got the most questions right. My math skills are finally being useful. I was already craving the pizza. After the last round, the teacher said, "Okay, I'll tally up all the points and let you all know who the winner is in a couple of weeks." But since I was keeping track of everyone's score, I already knew we won. I turned to TJ and I said, "TJ, guess what? We already..." Oh, this is the round that you were sick on. How did I not notice that until just now? But then, a couple of weeks go by and I'm not hearing any news about a pizza party. I was expecting to walk into class one day and there would just be a pile of pizza boxes waiting for me. But that never happened. The teacher in charge of the competition was the librarian. So one day I went up to her and I asked, did you ever say who won the Battle of the Books? Also, my favorite pizza is barbecue chicken. And she said, "Oh, these 2 fifth graders won." So the Battle of the Books was for both 5th and 6th graders. I was a 6th grader, so I went to all the 6th grader battles. But apparently, there was some low-life 5th grader who got every single question right and stole my pizza party! And that taught me a valuable lesson. Even when you work hard, you don't always get what you want in life. But that's okay. Because one day...
you'll be an adult and you can buy all the pizza you want without having to read first!
I'll take school facts for 800, Alex. This is the most useless class that a person could take in school.
Oh man. What is... poetry?
I'm sorry, Jeff, but the correct answer is all of them. They're all useless. In my first video, I didn't have enough time to say this, but I hate it when people are cool with their teachers. I understand that some teachers are more laid back than others, and sometimes they'll ask a class, "So, how was everyone's weekend?" Then if you want to talk about something or have important news, then you can share it. My dog died!
Haha, yeah, they do that.
But there is a line and you shouldn't cross it. Don't talk to your teacher just to talk to them during class. I don't know how much of a problem this is in other places of the world, but sometimes there would be kids in my class that would say, "Hey Susan, how was your daughter's dance recital? Did you remember all of her moves? I saw the video you posted on Facebook. It looked like she was having a fun time."
Stop it!
Stop it! Stop it!
Maybe I wouldn't have been a good teacher. Before I tell you about my poetry teacher, I need to tell you about the preparatory school I went to so you can better understand where I'm coming from. So I went to a preparatory school in 9th grade, and first off, what is a preparatory school? Google says it's a private school that prepares students for college. Now hearing that definition, you might think, wait, don't all schools prepare students for college? Isn't that a school's job? And you might think that a preparatory school is more fancy and made out of marble and all the kids come from rich families. No. What it means is that the schools get little government funding and parents have to pay for desks and the teacher's salary. I know different private schools will vary depending on how rich the parents are. I'm sure that school made out of marble exists somewhere, but the preparatory school I went to was relatively worse than a normal public school. The school I went to didn't even have desks. They had fold-up tables and the chairs were fold-up too. How did they- Oh. Well, now I know where all the budget went. The main difference between a public school and a prep school is that a prep school is smaller and there's a uniform and there's lockers. So, why did my twin sister and I attend a preparatory school? Because twins have superpowers and we need to go to a special school to enhance our abilities. Nah, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. That'd be cool though. We went because when we were starting our freshman year, our older brother was a senior and he was already attending this preparatory school, and my mom didn't want to have to drive to two high schools to pick us up. We already had a carpool in place. You can't just mess with the carpool. And me and my sister didn't know what to expect from a public high school. We've never been. We thought we'd get bullied or something. Boy, I feel like picking on someone today. Yeah, sure, we can go to a prep school. I mean, what's the worst that can happen? Well, the carpool we had made it so we would arrive at the school super early before everyone else, and we'd be picked up from the school super late. And also, because it was a prep school, they gave out a stupid amount of homework. I remember breaking up the homework into pieces, like, okay, I can do the geometry while I'm waiting for school to start, the biology homework I can do during geometry class, and I have choir after lunch, so I can just do this during lunch. Look at me being responsible. I have a little sister who just finished her freshman year in a public high school, and she thinks it was so hard. Oh, you thought your 9th grade was hard? Try doing twice the amount of homework and wear the same pants every day. So now the only question remaining is, why did my older brother go to a prep school in the first place? Bro, why did you go to a prep school in the first place? IDK, just decided to. Just felt like I should. My mom reads my scripts, and she told me that he went to a prep school because one of his friends said that there were cute girls at the school, so he decided to stay there for 4 years. Okay, now let's talk about my poetry teacher. I'll call him Mr. Poe, because that's short for poetry. Poetry wasn't even an elective class. Every freshman was required to take it, and surprisingly, poetry was only the second most useless class you took at the school. The sophomores took a class on Latin, you know, that dead language that no one speaks. So Mr. Poe, I don't want to judge him too hard. I don't know how he was like outside of school, but just picking up the vibes I got from him as a 14-year-old, I think he was depressed. I mean, to be fair, anyone who likes poetry probably has something wrong in their head. But Mr. Poe just seemed sad all the time. Every single day he would start the class by saying, "It's the best day ever." Which, if you think about it, saying that every day only means that the days are going to get better and better, which is sort of poetic. But I think Mr. Poe was lying to himself. Also, Mr. Poe really liked anacondas. I mean, snakes. He really liked snakes. Sometimes he would go off on tangents talking about snakes. Royal pythons, also called American ball python, got their name because they turn into a ball when they get nervous. Also, did you know that snakes have two... Never mind. Sometimes in class, we'd be analyzing poetry, and Mr. Poe told us that every single word in a poem was important. The poet didn't have to use the word the, but they did. What did they mean? Sometimes we would spend days analyzing a single poem, taking notes and talking about what we thought the poet meant. One time a poem we were reading had someone talking, so there were quotation marks at the start of the sentence, but there weren't quotation marks at the end. The poet forgot to put end quotes. I remember noticing it and thinking, aha! A clue! Mr. Poe, I just made a breaking discovery. There's no end quotes here, meaning that the whole rest of this poem is told by this character. And Mr. Poe said, oh no, that's just a typo. Well, frickin', why am I perfectly nitpicking this piece when the poet purposely put poor punctuation in his poems? Pterodactyl! This is gonna sound off topic, but do you guys know what lateral thinking puzzles are? Lateral thinking puzzles are sorta like riddles, but more stupid. You're given a strange situation with little information, and you have to ask the person who told you the puzzle yes or no questions to get the answer. My favorite lateral thinking puzzle is this, because it's so stupid. A man goes into a restaurant, orders albatross, eats one bite, and then jumps off a bridge. Why?
Now, normally, if we were playing legitly, you would ask me yes or no questions like, was the man in a relationship? And I would answer them saying, well, not anymore. The explanation is this. I'm not going to read it out because it's super long and complicated, but you can read it if you want. Well, Mr. Poe also liked to tell these lateral thinking puzzles, but his solutions were more dumber. One of the puzzles he told the class was, you're trapped in a restaurant, how do you get out? Now, I can think of like 5 solutions right off the top of my head. Okay, through the door, through a window, use a crowbar if it's locked. There's probably a sharp knife to cut through a wall, or you can dig a hole under everything with a spoon. But it was actually none of those answers. So, how do you get out of a restaurant you're trapped in? You get an education. Okay, let me explain. You're trapped in a restaurant because you're a waiter. That's your job. And to get out of the restaurant, you need to get a good education so you can get a better job. Kind of like how I was able to quit my job in the food industry by getting an education.
It's funny because he dropped out of college.
So the class got the answer to that riddle, but Mr. Poe told us another riddle and we never figured that one out. And that riddle is, anyone can dig a ditch, but it takes a real man to... blank. Given that the answer to the first riddle was education, the answer to this could be anything. I really wanted to know the answer to this riddle, so I googled it hoping that Mr. Poe just stole it from the internet, and I found this song, anyone can dig a hole close enough to a ditch, but it takes a real man to call it home. Which sounds poetic enough. Let's see if the song gives us any more clues. Mr. Poe, I didn't know you were into this sort of stuff. So I wish I could give you the answer, but I don't have one. Feel free to guess what you think the answer is and give your reasoning in the comments. That'll be fun to read. But I will say the answer that I did come up with that I think makes the most sense. Anyone can dig a ditch, but it takes a real man to hide the body.
If you thought my family owned a lot of hamsters, wait till I tell you about all the cats we had. Just a heads up, though, some of these cats are dead. They all lived 9 happy lives. None of them had a painful death. Except for one, maybe. We don't know. We'll get into that. So cats. Some people think cats are jerks and not as loyal or loving as dogs. And they're right. But if you think about it, cats improve our lives every day. Think back to YouTube in 2006. What was popular? Cat videos. If it wasn't for cats, we wouldn't have YouTube as a platform. Which I could make the argument is another jerk thing cats did. Now, I'm a cat lover, and anyone who says they dislike cats has obviously never snuggled up with a cat and had it purr on your chest as you pet it for so long that you both fall asleep and all your anxieties melt away and the only thing you care about is your fragile feline friend. Or they're allergic. Honestly, I think I'm slightly allergic to cats as well. Because every time I snuggle up with one, my eyes get all watery, my nose gets all stuffy. But like, I can deal with that. Maybe this is what love feels like. People like to put everybody into 2 categories. Either you're a dog person or a cat person. But why do I have to pick just one? Can't I look at these 2 animals and say that both of them have good qualities that make them amazing pets? Why can't I pick both? I'm bisexual for animals. Wait. That being said, here's all the cats I had growing up. So our family had just moved to our new house and we're all getting ready to go to church when my older brother, who was outside for some reason instead of getting ready, heard noises coming from a bush. And when he went to investigate, he found a little baby tabby kitten. He told my parents about the cat and they said its mom was probably looking for it, but if the cat was still there when we got back from church, then we could let it inside. And after we got back, my brother checked the bush and the cat was still there. So we took her in, we fed her, and we decided to name her Shady after Eminem's The Real Slim Shady because she was an obnoxious cat and didn't like us at all. Yeah, but she's so cute though. And that's how our family got our one and only cat. One cat is enough. There were no more cats. Until one night when I was sitting at the kitchen table and through the window of the back door, I saw 2 yellow eyes staring at me. And as a kid, I still thought monsters were real. So I pointed it out to my family, hey, there's eyes outside. And everyone turned and was like, what the... So we opened the back door, and a piece of the night just walked into the house like it lived there or something.
Does this mean we have bad luck?
Apparently, just waltzing in our house uninvited is a very effective strategy to get adopted, because she ended up living with us for the rest of her cat life. My older sister loved Sailor Moon, and in the show, there's this black cat named Luna. Spoiler alert, Luna's actually an alien that can turn into a human sometimes, but most of the time, she's just a cat. So we named the cat after her. And little old Luna fit great in our home. We were your standard nuclear family with 2 cats. Just 2. We never got another cat ever again.
Until one day, this other cat appeared in our backyard. We put Luna's and Shady's food bowls outside, which meant our backyard was basically a cat sanctuary for any cat that could jump our fence. And sometimes we would see this calico cat hanging out in our backyard. We didn't know if she already had a home, and she would run away from us if we got close. So, we left out a third food bowl for her. And then she invited some of her siblings along because two other cats decided to chill in our backyard. And one of the cats was a boy, which meant we had to get all five cats neutered. And just like that, we more than doubled the amount of cats we had. We were feline pretty good. Three more cats added to the family, because why not? That's the perfect amount of cats if you ask me. I'm going to name them now! What? We're not getting three more cats. Two is enough. What? We can't just kick them out. We're going to find them a new home, but we're not keeping them.
Okay.
Also, you're not allowed to name them.
What?
If you name them, then you'll get attached to them, and we're not keeping them. So since our mom banned us from naming the cats, we called them the Calico Cat and the two other ones. And we kept calling them this until our mom found them a new home. Turns out that their new home was our home, because my mom never found them a new home. So we just left them food outside, and they were happy with that relationship. They would let you pet them, sometimes, and even sit on your lap, but if you tried to pick them up, they would hiss and bite you. They did not like being picked up, or being inside. They were feral cats. One time it was raining, so we thought it would be a good idea to bring the Calico Cat inside, but she freaked out. She hissed and scratched us. She hated being inside more than she hated the rain. And by the way, cats can be very loud. Like, as loud as dogs. They just never raise their voices. They're too proper for that. So since she didn't like being inside, we just put her back outside in the pouring rain. We ended up naming the boy cat Spot, the other cat we named Pepper, and the Calico, we didn't change her name. We named her Calico. That's like naming a dog Golden Retriever or Chihuahua. I don't know if that's sad, but you know what is sad? One day, Spot just disappeared. He stopped showing up to the house, and we never saw him again. I hope he found a good home, but who knows, you know? Maybe he went off to start a second life, or a fifth or sixth life. Get it? Because they have nine lives. Yeah, but he's probably dead. And then, I was in high school when Shady died. She had a good home with us, but it was her time to go. So we were down to three cats, and we never got another cat ever again. But then one day, my parents were out on a walk, and my mom saw a scrawny black kitten on the side of the road, and she said, "Can we keep it?" But my dad said, "No, keep walking, keep walking." And then on their way back from the walk, for some reason my dad didn't take a different route, the cat was still there, meowing at them. So my parents brought her home, and my twin sister named her Pepsi. My sister really loved Pepsi. I was more of a Coke person myself. But when my sister went off to college and I stayed home for community college, we let Pepsi outside one day, and she didn't come back. We didn't know how to tell my sister that her cat was missing, so we didn't. But we were all really worried. We put up missing posters, and after almost 2 months of being missing, she just appeared in the backyard. I don't know what happened in that 2 month period. She looked fine. Maybe she got adopted by another family, and now some poor family is missing their cat, Salem. Maybe she went out looking for my sister and got lost. Maybe she started acting in some Japanese TV shows. Who knows? But we found her. We didn't even tell my sister that her cat had been missing until after we found Pepsi. So she wasn't very happy about that. Then Luna passed away. It was sad, but cats don't live forever. Sorry. Sailor Moon wasn't even a good show anyway. Now, long-time Odd Ones Out fans might know this next story. My older brother found another kitten at the gym he worked at, brought her home, and named her Azula. But the name Azula didn't stick because we found out that Azula was a dude. I was the one, by the way, who saw Azula's firebenders and told everyone. Just wanted to get that part of the story straight. So Azula's name had to change, and while this was happening, we had a French foreign exchange student living with us, and she didn't know the word for kitten, so she called him Zababycat. And then we all started calling him Zababycat, and now that's his name, Babycat. That's how he got his name, Babycat. Since we're on the topic of pets, I have something that I probably should have mentioned a while ago. For the most part, I try to keep this channel goofy and lighthearted, which is probably why I waited so long to tell you this. But around Christmas of 2017, my dog Georgie passed away. You might remember her in some of my older videos. She was 13 years old, and just like the cats, it was her time to go. Yes, it was sad, but that's what happens to pets. They become your best friend, but they're not in your life forever. So if you have pets, remember to appreciate them now. I wouldn't have changed anything about Georgie's life. She was a good dog. Sorry, that part got a little personal. and my dog Poppy did not take Georgie's death very well, so my parents had to get an emotional support dog for their dog, and they got Jax, because he liked to jump, so he was their Jumping Jax. Aw, what a good name.
Hey, just a heads up, don't get too attached to any of the hamsters mentioned in this video, because they're all dead. And I would say that no hamsters were harmed in the making of this video. Well, I mean, no hamsters were harmed while I made this video. They're all still dead. But some hamsters, they got harmed. Just keep watching. If there's anything I've learned that the internet just loves is stupid drama and cute animals. So I'm going to talk about all the cute hamsters that I've enslaved. Our family enslaved quite a lot. It was my twin sister who really wanted a pet hamster and bugged my mom to get one. And my mom, being super nice, bought her the cage, and we bought everything else, including a little black hamster. We named him Squeaks. And he liked to do this really cute thing where he put all of his food in his hamster wheel and was made of plastic so he could do that. And then late at night, he would just run in it and it would sound like... It was like a more annoying maraca. I actually made a comic on paper inspired by this hamster. Wow, you got a hamster? Yeah, but he doesn't do much. Well, yeah, this type of hamster is nocturnal. Really? That means I'll hardly notice him. And then at night, he's trying to sleep, but the hamster is loud, and that's keeping him awake. And the joke is that he said he'd hardly notice him, and he's noticing him. It's not that funny. And I need to tell you about a dog that we have named Georgie. And actually, a little fun fact about Georgie. She was born on Election Day of 2004, which is a much cooler holiday to have a birthday on. It only comes once every 4 years. It's like leap year. It's more rare. So since George W. Bush won the 2004 election, we named our dog Georgie after him. Aww. And that also means that her 12th birthday was on the 2nd. I definitely won't be able to get this video out by that time, but still.
Happy birthday to you.
Yay!
So Georgie can get the birthday, because it's her birthday, and Poppy can get the girl, because she's a girl. Do you like it?
I wonder if this tastes good.
Oh.
This is a huge waste of money.
Anyway, back to rodents. This dog just loved to murder these animals. Well, I don't know if murder's the right word. No, murder's the right word. You have to understand that Georgie is a West Highland Terrier, and that breed is known for hunting small animals. So having Georgie and a hamster in the same house doesn't mix well. We had this little plastic hamster ball that we put Squeaks in sometimes. The first time we put Squeaks into his plastic ball, my older brother bowled him. Like a bowling ball. PETA, don't sue me. I was vegan for a week. And Georgie thought it was a treat just for her. A treat with a hard outer shell and a juicy middle. She would go straight up rabid wolf on that hamster ball. We didn't put Squeaks inside his hamster ball anymore after that. But there's even more to say about this hamster. One day, me and my sister came home from school and Squeaks was just gone. He escaped! Everyone, check your pockets! We looked everywhere and we couldn't find him. We had to keep a close eye on Georgie at all times. My sister put up missing posters around the house. I don't know if those helped. We made these traps out of Duplo. Did anyone else's parents get them Duplo instead of Legos? No, only my parents were that lame. Alright. We built this box thing out of Duplo, and we made these stairs going up to the top of the box, and we put lettuce on each step, and the plan was that the hamster would walk up the stairs and fall in the box, cause they're stupid. But the traps never worked. And all the hamsters we got in the future that also escaped, we made the same traps, and not once did they ever work. 4 days. Squeaks was missing for 4 days. We found his body inside the wall. He was alive! My dad was sitting on the couch relaxing. It was dead quiet, and he just heard the faintest... Squeaks was inside the wall! We think he got in through our laundry chute. I don't know what I would do if my kid's hamster was inside the wall of my house. Well, kids, now's an important time I teach you about death. My dad ended up cutting 3 holes in the wall and lured Squeaks out with some lettuce. Poor thing, he was probably starving. Hopefully he kept some extra food in his cheeks. So even being tormented by the dog and getting stuck in the wall for 4 days, Squeaks still lived a fulfilling 2 years of life. Hamsters don't have that long a lifespan. We buried him in the backyard. After the Squeaks dynasty, we got some more hamsters. Squeaks 2, that was the next one. We thought maybe if we introduced Squeaks 2 to Georgie, then they could be friends and get along. I'll spare you the details of what happened that night. The next one we named Killer because he kept biting us, so get it? Killer? Yeah, he ended up getting killed.
Nah, I'm just kidding. He wasn't killed. He lived a long and normal hamster life. Squeaks, too, was killed, though. I don't know if you picked up on that. We bought these three little hamsters. Seriously, they're the most adorable little things. They look like this. I forgot their names. We'll just call them the Three Amigos. Aw. The lady at the pet store told us that if we bought hamsters from the same litter, they would all get along. She was obviously just trying to sell us more hamsters. Or maybe she didn't have any siblings. But these bros just hated each other. They would never stop fighting. As I was writing the script for this, I thought, well, maybe they were just aggressively playing. So I googled, do hamsters play with each other, just to be sure, and the first thing that showed up, dwarf hamsters, which is what the Three Amigos were, are quite territorial and will not see former cage mates as old friends. They see them as threatening rivals. So there we go, you really know your hamsters, lady. So we had to get three different cages for them. We put them right next to each other, and I swear they still gave each other some death glares. I actually made a video a long time ago about this time I broke one of their cages. I was cleaning it outside, and for whatever reason, I was like, I wonder if I could stand on it. The answer, no, I couldn't. The glass broke and I bled everywhere, and I still have the scar on my foot. And then all the Three Amigos died off, one by one. Sorry, I'm getting really emotional. We also had this other hamster named Buddy, and I wasn't going to mention him because he just escaped and we never found him. Except as my mom was reading over the script, because she reads over my scripts, thanks mom, she turned to me and said, did we ever tell you what happened to Buddy? And I said, what do you mean? She said, you know how we couldn't find him? Well, we did, but the dog got to him first. This one time I wanted to buy a hamster and I saw some that were on sale, and there was this piece of paper next to the cage that said, please adopt us. Oh shoot, I'll take one of these puppies. No, not an actual puppy. I meant one of the hamsters. And I named her Pumpkin Seed because she was that tan pumpkin seed color. But then one month after I got her, she just died. For no reason. Even though I loved her. She had food, she had water. This wasn't the first time I was taking care of a hamster, okay? All the other ones lived for a couple of years. I was so sad. I totally got chipped. No wonder they were on sale. They were all halfway to death's door. I mean, I only had the hamster for a month. I didn't get that emotionally attached to it. But then later, I got a different hamster that I paid full price for, and I named her Gumball. Unlike all the other hamsters that were technically my sister's, this hamster was all mine. And she didn't have anything traumatic happen to her. She had a good hamster life. I was pretty sad when Gumball died. We lavished these hamsters, okay? We loved them. At least my sister did. She cried when they died and made little gravestones for them. Our mom used to always say, there's no point in being a skinny hamster. She gave them a lot of treats. So much so that it got to the point that the hamster would come out looking for my mom just by the sound of her voice. All in all, there's about 7 dead hamsters buried in our backyard. Rip in peace, little bros.
I hate you!
Oh! Well, next time, don't steal my Monopoly!
Ariana, give James your $200 you landed on his property.
No! He's in jail! I'm not gonna give money to a criminal! That's not how you...
Mommy, why is brother screaming?
Shut the up, Sally. You don't get to talk after stealing my last railroad!
I wish I was never born! Me too! You think I wanted this?
Hi, what you all just witnessed is the phenomenon known as Family Game Night. Family Game Night plays an important role in the household dynamic, as studies have shown that families who participate in activities together form closer bonds and stronger relationships with each other. So try setting aside some time to play board games with your family. And if they beat you, cut them out of your life forever. Okay, have fun, you guys.
I like board games. I guess any game that doesn't involve me getting up and moving around, I'm a huge fan of. Also, since I'm bad at everything and don't like playing games against someone who's better than me, I really love the games that don't require any type of skill, like the game Chutes and Ladders, which I just learned today has another name called Snakes and Ladders. And I'm going to call it that instead, because I'd rather draw snakes than chutes. In Snakes and Ladders, you have no free will. You're at the mercy of a single dice, and I love it. While I was looking up walkthroughs for Snakes and Ladders, I quickly learned that this game was made for preschoolers, which is probably why it's so simple. Or how about the game Sorry, which is the most unapologetic game I've ever played. There's some strategy in that game, but most of the time you're just getting revenge on the players who've wronged you. And the creators of Sorry knew this because the tagline of the game is Sorry, the game of sweet revenge. Which, if you think about it, is a pretty funny oxymoron. Aha! Take this! Sorry. I know how to play chess, but like most things, I'm not very good at it. Unless I'm playing against someone under the age of 4,
I don't want to play that game.
Because it shows everyone how bad I am at planning ahead. That's a game that's 100% strategy-based. It's like the IQ test of board games. Beating someone in chess will put you more ahead academically than anyone with a Harvard degree. And you'll get more babes. However, there is one exception, and that is, it's okay to lose at chess if you're playing against a computer, even if it's on easy mode. Computers are way better at planning ahead than anyone, because I don't know how, but a human made a computer that can beat the world's best chess player, but the creator of the computer can't beat the world's best chess player. So I guess that means it's game over. We tried our best, but we've peaked. Whenever you beat a computer in chess, it was going easy on you. Imagine if we made a computer that could beat the world's best Snakes and Ladders player. I would pay money to see a Snakes and Ladders championship. And everyone watching knows that the person playing is just some Joe Schmo that acts like the world's best Snakes and Ladders player, but they're all still excited. And there's real snakes that you get to slide down? That would be amazing! Sign me up. While we're on the topic of chess, I want to tell you about this cool sport I discovered called chess boxing. This is an actual competitive sport where two players play chess for 3 minutes. Then box each other for 3 minutes. And they keep switching between chess and boxing until someone either gets a checkmate, they run out of time playing chess, or they KO the other player. I love this sport because it combines two polar opposite games, and it's something that anyone can play. Brains over brawn? Try saying that after I sucker punch you in the- Oh, that was a good move. I'm gonna punch you so hard in the balls for that. I know I just said I was bad at chess, but if there's any YouTubers who want to challenge me to a chess boxing match, I will gladly take you to the ring, and we can charge people $12 just to watch. And we can end it in a draw, you know, so that way you won't look bad in front of your fans. So Battleship, that's another board game, and it also got a big Hollywood movie based off of it. I haven't seen it, but I hope there's a scene where the captain of the ship goes, "Men, fire at D6? And then there's an explosion in the distance, and then Rihanna, who is actually in that movie, says, "Sir, the alien sent a message. It says, miss." And the captain goes, Someone write that down so we don't forget. And then there'd be an explosion at the back of their ship, and alarms start going off, and everyone on board starts freaking out except for the captain, and he goes, "Rihanna, send the aliens a message. Tell them, hit." Also, ask them if they think the situation would make a good board game. And if that scene is not in the movie, I hate it. Did anyone else collect a bunch of Pokemon cards, but never knew how to play the game? I don't think I met a single person who actually knew how to play the card game. Which was weird, because in my school, the card game was just as popular as the video games. Kids would always show off their collection of cards and binders, and everyone always wanted the highly coveted shiny Charizard card. You know which one I'm talking about. You know which one I'm talking about. You know which one I'm talking about! Unlike Yu-Gi-Oh!, which had dedicated episodes explaining why these 5 pieces of cardboard were expensive, the shiny Charizard was rare, not because it was good in the game, but because everyone agreed that it looked cool. But then when you ask someone, "Hey, do you want to play a game?" they would say, "Okay, I summon my Charizard in attack mode." Does anyone even know how to play the Pokemon card game? I bet none of these guys even know what they're doing. How'd this guy win? He didn't even call Uno. I can't be too hard on the Pokemon cards, because the card game I like is probably way more complicated than Pokemon. I don't know for sure, because, like I said, I don't know how to play the Pokemon card game, but my favorite card game is Neopets. I'm just kidding, that was a joke. Kind of. I did actually own a lot of Neopet cards. I don't remember exactly how to play. I do remember you have to get 21 points to win, which got me into playing blackjack. But it's okay that I don't remember how to play, because no one else is playing this game. I wanted to find some footage of a Neopet TGC championship, only to come to the disappointing realization that no Neopet championship exists, which is sad. So, if there's any YouTubers watching who want to fight my Scorchio, square up. Okay, but for real, the card game I like the most is Magic the Gathering. And fun little factoid, all 3 card games I've mentioned were created by the same company, Wizards of the Coast. Hey, is that a Monopoly reference? I've been playing Magic since 2007, and back then the game was a lot more simple. Look at some of these more recent cards. First, see how many words are on them? And if we flip them over, they merge into an even bigger card. What? If you showed these cards to my 11-year-old self, I would have lost my marbles. My favorite thing about Magic is when Dick Garfield, was first creating the game in 1993, he didn't really have an accurate way of testing the cards to make sure they're all fair and balanced, and he ended up creating some of the most overpowered cards in Magic. And players today refer to these cards as the Power 9, because there were 9 really good ones, which is why every single one of them is banned.
Now, don't get me wrong. The Power 9 are good cards, but none of them are like, you win the game good. Take this one, for example, Ancestral Recall. All it says is, draw 3 cards, or force opponent to draw 3 cards. Which is stupid that they added that last part. Why would you ever give your opponent 3 more cards to beat you with? Now, I know what you're thinking. Wait, a slightly better Pot of Greed, which is a card that allows me to draw 2 new cards from my deck and place them into my hand, is one of the top 9 most powerful Magic cards? Yeah, Pot of Greed is banned too. Games play such an important role in childhood, and here's what they all teach us. In Magic, if you're really good at what you do, no one will invite you to their tournament. Monopoly, white-collar crime is okay. Battleship, just guess and check. Snakes and ladders, if you see a ladder, climb it immediately. And no one cares about Neopets. Now, if you excuse me, I have to show this prison guard my coupon I have that lets me get out of jail anytime I like.
Mommy, why do humans hate us?
I don't know, Matthew. Our species is completely harmless to them, and we keep the mosquito population down, who are responsible for killing more humans every year than other humans do.
So, humans have no rational reason to fear us, but they still do?
I'm afraid humans aren't that smart, Matthew. Sleep tight. Don't let the bed humans bite.
Love you, Mommy.
I love you too, Matthew.
Mom?
I think the hate that spiders get is a tad bit undeserved. Okay, fine, if you're in the shower and you see a spider crawling up your leg like a freaking pervert, then that's an appropriate time to freak out. But other than that, spiders are most likely not going to hurt you. Their webs are too weak to trap you, they don't know how to open doors, and there's only like a 50% chance that they're venomous. Okay, but for real, unless you live in Australia, the chances of you dying by a spider bite is pretty low. There are venomous spiders, yes, and if you're having a negative reaction to a spider bite, then you should get treatment, but a large percentage of spiders are harmless. Even the Black Widow, known as the most venomous spider in North America, won't kill you if you're a healthy adult. Their bite will be painful for a couple of days, sure, but like, you'll walk it off.
That was a joke. If you get bitten by a Black Widow spider, then don't walk it off. Go see a doctor.
And hey, if you're lucky enough, you'll get superpowers. So, wait, the 2 most dangerous spiders in North America are the brown recluse and the Black Widow? What are you trying to say about dangerous colors, America? Oh, wait, the great white shark's even more dangerous. Never mind. Technically, sharks are, like, the second least dangerous animal out there besides puppies. Because, like, they don't want to eat humans. I mean, like, if you had to fight a spider and a shark, this shark would win. Also, spiders kill pests. According to this comic I made in 2014 and this National Geographic article, a single spider can eat about 2,000 insects a year. So if you're not a fan of flies, moths, or mosquitoes, which incidentally kill 600,000 people a year, then you're on Team Spider, because they're also not fans of them. Well, they are fans of them, but they are fans because they eat them. I'm not saying you have to be roommates with arachnids. I'm just saying that if you see a spider, don't put it through torture continuously smashing it with a blunt object. It's still moving! It's still moving!
Kill me.
Instead, get a cup and carefully place it over a spider. They're really dumb, so doing this will be super easy. Then scoop up your new best friend with a piece of paper and yeet it back into the wild with the rest of God's glorious creatures. Yeah, actually, there's a high chance that they won't make it being thrown into a completely different environment, but they should have thought of that before they decided to live in my house. Even though a spider has 8 eyes, they have terrible eyesight, so that spider that landed on your face did not do it intentionally. Some spiders that live in caves are completely blind. They don't even have 1 eye. But even if they did have eyes, their whole world would still be pitch black. What a sad life to be a part of. Just every time you're outside seeing the sun, just think that somewhere there's a colony of spiders just in pure blackness. Just never seeing the sun, never seeing their children smile or graduate college. They're just sitting in a cave for all their life. So is nature, and that is the way the cookie crumbles. Also, we're forgetting the most amazing thing about spiders, which is that they're incredibly talented in web design. Proportionately, the silk that makes up a spider web is stronger than the fibers that make up a bulletproof vest. So next time you go to a gunfight, put on a spider web instead.
The amazing thing about spiderwebs is that not only can they save Wilbur from being slaughtered, but it's just stupid incredible that something so small can make such an intricate shape from nothing but the material inside their own bodies. The golden silk orb weaver spider has too many middle names and has enough silk inside of them to make 3 full spiderwebs. And it's this guy's job to pin that spider down and pull out all of its silk like some kind of spider predator. It's okay, though. The documentary said he was just harmlessly immobilizing the spiders. I can't believe this is someone's job. I don't think telling people I'm a YouTuber is that bad anymore. So, what do you do for a living? I harmlessly immobilize spiders with thumbtacks and pull silk out of their abdomen to add to my ever-increasing collection. What about you? Oh, I, make YouTube videos? I see people with arachnophobia being irrationally afraid of these harmless little guys, and I just don't see the sense of fearing something that ultimately does good things for the ecosystem. But you know what we should be afraid of? Bees! Bees are terrifying! Look, they're sucking the blood out of this guy to make honey! Oh, they're dying at an alarming rate? Good! Okay, that was a joke. Bees are, without a doubt, the most important insect on this planet. Not only do they have the best work ethic of any living thing on Earth, which is why none of them are YouTubers, they also pollinate 30% of the world's crops. Don't ask me who pollinates the rest, because I don't know. Without bees, humanity would turn to pure anarchy. Bees are so important that world-famous comedian Jerry Seinfeld made a documentary about the life of a bee and what the world would be like without them. But ever since 2006, bees, just like all the memes say, have been dying at an alarming rate. The scary thing is that scientists don't know exactly the reason for this bee-pocalypse. But they think it has to do with new pesticides being used on farms, parasites that kill the bee, and global warming. So once we figure out how to fix those 3 problems, we'll be in good shape. It's just a little bee pun. We like to have fun around here. Now, what can you, a concerned citizen, do to stop the dropping population of bees? Most likely nothing, because I don't think anyone watching this makes laws about pesticides or stopping global warming. So we just gotta sit back and hope the people who make those laws know the importance of bees. But maybe you should plant a couple flowers just to be on the safe side. The reason I have a fear of bees is that I've gotten stung by a bee not 3 times, not 4 times, but 2 times. Two times. Now, obviously, as I've grown, I see the importance of bees, and I know not to throw rocks at them. The first time I got stung, I was outside, and I guess I was playing too close to a beehive, because I got stung on my arm, and I cried a lot. The second time, I was in my backyard, barefoot, and I was walking around, and you know how sometimes when you're about to do something, and your brain realizes that you're about to make a mistake, but your body is already committed to the motion, and you don't have enough time to stop yourself? So I was in the middle of taking a step, and I saw that I was about to step on a bee, but my body didn't have the reaction time or the motor skills to avoid the step, and... I'm sure the bee was just acting in self-defense, but... Man, that scarred me. Some people may have an allergic reaction to bee stings, and they should go to a hospital if they get stung, but in my case, it just hurt a lot, and my mom put baking soda over where I got stung, and I cried. When people found out I was afraid of bees, they would always tell me that bees are docile creatures, and they only sting you if they feel threatened. They would say the same thing about spiders too, by the way. So whenever I would see a bee, I would silently freak out and stay as still as a rock, cause unlike spiders, with bees, you're not allowed to fight back. You'll both lose if that happens. I gotta show this bee how unthreatening I am. They should be able to just take a look at me and know that. But then, when a bee lands on your arm... Holy frick. That's true fear. You just have to quietly watch the bee, hoping it didn't just have a bad day and decide to end its life on you. That never happened, though. Ever since I took a more calm approach to bees, I've never been stung. And I've never been bitten by a spider, either. Wasps, though, they're just mean. They can pack up and leave for all I care. I don't give a crap about wasps. So, what did we learn? Hey, if you're watching this and it's late at night and you have school tomorrow, I'm sorry. Top 10 things that keep me awake at night. Number 10, eating all those sugary snacks before my bedtime. My blood sugar goes through the roof. Sorry, I just can't help myself. I love a good cookie dipped in hot chocolate. Number 9, death and existentialism. Just the thought that one day me and everyone I love will die, and in just 500 years, no one is going to remember me. So what's the point of doing anything? In the grand scheme of the universe, do I even matter? Unless the internet's still around by then. Thumbs up if you're watching this in the year 2516. And also,
don't forget me?
Number 8, my dogs! My dogs just love to sleep on my bed every night. And you see, I sleep on a twin-size bed, which is a stupid name for a bed that can fit one person. And I'm actually a twin, so I'm allowed to sleep on those. And I'm not on the below average side of the height spectrum, so I cover about 110% of the bed. And if me and my dogs are both cognitive enough to plan something out, maybe we could set up a system. I mean, they're pretty small dogs. I did the math. They should be able to fit. But my dogs have found that the most comfortable part of the bed is right dead center in the middle. So I just gotta finagle my way into a comfortable position, and if the dog leans up against you or sits on your leg, then you're obligated by dog law not to move, because you might disturb the dog, and you love them too much to do that. And my bed is right next to a window, so I sometimes open the blinds so they can look outside, and so they're both right next to my face. But then in the morning, if there's another person or, God forbid, another dog outside, then... Jeez, that was a long one. I just like talking about dogs. Number 7, there are as many creatures on your body as there are people on Earth. And you don't want to even know how many are living on your bed right now. Now, is this true? I don't know, I just saw it on one of those fun fact websites. Not too fun of a fact, I think. But not knowing whether or not it's true is even scarier. That means there are probably microorganisms dying on you every second. At least 12 of them have died on you since you started watching this video. But chances are that some of them are probably doing it on your kneecaps, on your eyelashes. Microorganism, more like micro-orgasm. Now there's two ways you can look at this. One being that there's so many tiny creatures living on me, and no matter how hard I scrub, I'll never be clean. Or, you're never alone. Every night when you hop into that empty bed of yours, you're sleeping with billions of microorganisms. You slut. Number 6, they never caught the Zodiac Killer. I know he was around in the 70s, but if he was in his 20s in the 70s, that means he's only in his late 60s, early 70s right now. He can still be out there. Who knows what he could be doing? Maybe even failing at running for president. Ugh. And also, according to some conspiracy theories, they never caught John Wilkes Booth. Maybe Booth wants to get revenge. Maybe he's had enough and now he wants to run for president. Number 5. Fractals. What are those, you ask? Imagine you're a farmer and you have infinity fence posts to build a closed pen for your animals. And you have to use all the fence posts. And you think, well, first off, that's physically impossible. If I have infinity fence posts, then I can't use all of them because I'll always have more. Hey, while you're complaining and theorizing over there, I just built your stupid pen and it looks like this. This is a fractal, children. It's a closed shape with an infinite perimeter. What? What? Infinite perimeter? But I can see it. I can measure it. Oh no, shut up. You're not looking close enough. Let's zoom in. Basically, you can zoom up on this pattern forever. That's just what a fractal is. So since no matter how much you zoom up on this shape, it will always repeat itself. The perimeter of this shape, or the fence you use to make it, is infinite. It's a closed shape with an infinite perimeter. Is the area of this shape infinite too? I don't know, ask Vsauce. Doesn't that blow your mind? Number 4, barcode scanners scan the white spaces in the barcode, not the black spaces. Number 3, looking on my phone for hours before I go to bed. How many times do you tell your friends over Skype, alright, I'm going to bed now, and then you go to your bed and you pull out your phone and mess around with it for an hour? And I've heard some studies saying, oh, looking at computer screens all day makes it harder for you to sleep, which is probably true. Why do I go on my phone every night? And the sad thing is I usually stop looking at my phone because my battery is going to die. I have a problem. Number 2, the universe is huge. Whoa, do you realize how big space is? Man, we are just a speck in the grand scheme of things. This is kind of getting back to my point that nothing really matters. Did you know that scientists have found a black hole that's 12 billion times larger than the sun? That black hole is about 1,800 light years long. You know, you probably could have lived your whole lives without knowing that. I'm sorry. Before we get to number 1, here are some honorable mentions. And the number 1 thing that keeps me awake at night is... YouTube is not a stable job. Because of how long it takes me to make a video, I can't really give my opinion on YouTube drama.
Heck, I'm still working on my Fine Bros rant. So a lot of you probably know YouTube took away some creators' monetization on videos for not being advertiser-friendly, and they weren't even telling them about it. Now I'm a pretty innocent PG-rated channel, so I didn't get affected by this new change at all. See you later, scrubs! But dang it, if this shows us anything, is that YouTube does not care too much at what's making their website profitable. What's stopping YouTube from saying, hey, we're gonna take 90% of your ad revenue and all your titles have to say YouTube is great in them. And yeah, if YouTube makes bad business decisions, then they'll be out of business. But so will I. So that keeps me awake at night.
Hello? Okay. It's for you, James.
Hey, James. This is James from the future.
I just wanted to give you a call and let you know that...
Puberty can be tough, but you can get through it.
So I just wanted to let you know that everything's gonna be okay and...
I love you.
You got the wrong number.
I grew up in a generation where smartphones were a new thing and everyone in my class had one, except for me. My parents never got me one because they didn't want me to access the internet on a device that could fit in my pocket because they were super strict and didn't want me looking at... internet stuff?
Which backfired horribly.
So they never gave me a smartphone. In fact, I didn't even get my first cell phone until I was 16 years old. Now, as an adult who uses a cell phone every day, I don't know how I survived for 16 years without one. I think when I was younger, if I was ever in a situation where I needed to call my parents, I would just ask the nearest person if I could borrow their phone. Now, if there's any parents watching this who haven't given their children a cell phone yet, take it from a guy on the internet with no children. You should get them one. It doesn't have to be a smart one, you can just give them your standard drug dealer phone, but you should at least give them a cell phone in case there's an emergency and they need to call you or the police. The only downside I can think of giving your child a phone is they'll end up spending too much time on it, so you should just turn off their service from time to time, I don't know. When I turned 16 and finished up my sophomore year of high school, I got my very first cell phone. An LG Cosmos 2.
I didn't grow up in the 90s. Everyone else had iPhones, but I was the only one with a phone that had a keyboard on it.
And with that cell phone, I've had a couple of incidences where sometimes a random person would call me thinking I was someone else and then wouldn't admit they're wrong. And that's how you segue into the theme of this month's video. This first story happened when I was working at Subway.
That's right, another Subway story! Hashtag Subway 4. It wasn't good enough to be in the other three.
So, it was 5 minutes until closing, and we get a phone call on the Subway phone. I pick it up and say,
Thank you for calling Subway, how may I help you?
I was supposed to say, this is James, how may I help you? But I wasn't about to tell this random stranger my name.
Idiot.
Anyway, the other person on the line said, hey, what time do you guys close? In 5 minutes. Is it alright if I show up late? I just need gas. And being the good employee that I was totally willing to make this guy's sandwich over the phone, let him pick it up after we closed, and then I wouldn't ring him up and just pocket the money. I'm just kidding, I wouldn't do that. That's a crime. Please don't sue me. So I said, yeah, I can do that. What kind of sandwich do you want? And he said, I just need gas.
Oh, don't worry, sir. This sandwich will give you plenty of gas. I mean, do you want chips or something?
No, he said. I just need gas. I was a little confused.
Okay, yes. So you'll get gas, then are you gonna stop by and pick up a sandwich? And he said, I don't want a sandwich. And then it hit me. Even though the first thing I ever said to this guy was, thank you for calling Subway, I think he thought he was talking to a gas station.
So I said, sir, this is a Subway?
Oh.
And I never got the chance to tell him that gas pumps don't close. This next story happened when I was at home and I got a call from a number I didn't recognize. Now, I've had friends tell me that they don't answer the phone to any number they don't recognize, but my anxiety won't let me do that. What if it's your bank calling saying your account got hacked? What if it's your grandma, because why would you have her saved in your phone? Or what if it's your Nigerian uncle who wants to give you his collection of gold bars and needs your information for a wire transfer? You just never know, so I always pick up the phone. So I answered it, and it was this woman asking for a Lawrence. And I said, oh, I'm not, that's, you have the wrong number. And she goes,
isn't this 416295? That's obviously not a real number, so don't try calling it. And I said, no, this is 416293, because that's my phone number. Again, that's not actually a valid phone number, so please don't call it. And she goes, 3? I don't think I pressed 3. And I don't know what to say to this woman, because my number is 416293. It's really not. But she doesn't think she pushed 3. So I don't know how she's talking to me right now. Unless she did. So I said, well, obviously, you did. And then I made a comic about the whole situation because I thought the internet would think it was funny. This next story happened not too long ago. I got a call from a number I didn't recognize at 9:30 in the morning. And I was lying in my bed, asleep. And most people would agree that you're supposed to be awake and productive at 9:30. And I didn't want whoever this stranger was thinking I'm lazy, so I had to answer the phone with my best, I've been awake for several hours voice. Hello?
You're going to have to come quickly! Timmy fell down the well, Vance!
What?
I said, you're going to have to come quickly because Timmy fell down the well, Vance!
I could tell it was a woman on the phone, but it was either her accent or the phone being buggy or I just had woken up, but I could not understand anything she was saying. But I could make out one word, which was Vance. So, I did not have a lot to go off of. I said, I think you have the wrong number. Okay, goodbye. Well, I should probably get the day started, I thought as I went back to sleep. But then immediately I got a call from the same number, and I thought, okay, maybe if this person is calling again, even after I explicitly told her she had the wrong number, maybe it's not a wrong number after all, maybe there's something else going on, maybe it's an emergency, so maybe, talk to me. Okay. I can't understand anything you're saying. So then this woman must have handed the phone to her friend because a different voice started talking and I could actually understand her and I'll never forget what she said, which was,
Vance, no one thinks
that you're funny.
And even though I'm not Vance, that kinda hurt. So I stated the obvious, which was, yes I am. And also I'm not Vance. And she said,
no, Lance.
So this whole time, these two have been looking for a Lance. So I told this woman, I'm not Lance either. And she said,
well, this is the number they gave me.
Okay, if she had said it like, oh, I'm sorry, this is the number they gave me. I didn't mean to call you, stranger. Also, I do think you're funny and enjoy your videos. Then that would have been totally fine. She's just shifting the blame to someone else. But instead, she sounded so condescending, like I was wasting her time. Well, this is the number they gave me, and they can't be wrong, so you must be the real Lance. So I said, well, they must have given it to you wrong. Look, I'm too tired to be polite. But then, she hung up on me. Like this woman just basically called a random person, said, you're not funny, and then hung up. So I decided to call her back and said, hey, I just found the real Lance. He's the funniest guy I ever met, and he told me he doesn't give his phone number out to rude pieces of shit. I'm just kidding on the last part. I thought about doing it, but then I went back to sleep. I didn't do it. And then someone on the internet found my phone number, and I changed it. And whoever has my old number is probably getting a lot of calls from strangers and people I went to high school with. Sorry about that.
Do you guys remember Jay from the Subway videos? I basically said he believed in zodiac signs and chakras and third eyes. See, I'm someone who doesn't really believe in that sort of stuff. Oh, hey, Black Zen.
Hey, James.
So Jay was trying to teach me about energies and vibrations, and he told me about this YouTube channel called Infinite Waters, parentheses, Diving Deep. Now on this channel, you will see videos like What I Eat in a Day as a Vegan, How to Stop Burning Bridges with People, 7 Amazing Tips That Will Turn You into a Self-Loving Whiz. But he also has videos like How to Open Your Third Eye. So I don't necessarily agree with everything he says on his videos, but I really like him and you should check him out. And the creator of these videos, named Ralph, I just love how he starts off every single video. He goes,
peace, infinite waters, diving deep once again, can I get a hello there? And it is super peaceful and I recommend it. And on a lot of his videos, he talks about doing a
7-day vegan challenge, 7-day vegan challenge, 7-day vegan challenge, 7-day vegan challenge.
You know, for the amount of times you bring up
the 7-day vegan challenge,
you'd think it would solve all your problems, which is why I, James, have decided to partake in the 7-day vegan challenge. But I'm going to call it the 7-day vegan challenge, baby. Solves all your problems. Can't get enough sleep? 7-day vegan challenge, baby. Can't find your car keys? 7-day vegan challenge, baby. People keep interrupting you? You wanna die? 7-day vegan challenge, baby. All these lame-o pleb YouTubers doing these lame-o pleb challenges, like, why does this exist? While they're doing this, I'm actually going out of my way to suffer for a whole week for views. I did some research into what was vegan, and apparently Reese's Puffs and Oreos are vegan.
Well, this is gonna be super easy.
As of recording this, I have already completed the 7-day vegan challenge, and I've kinda delayed making this video because being a vegan has changed me. So while I was doing the 7-day vegan challenge, I wrote this log after each day. I'm not gonna read all of it, just the first and last day of the challenge, because days 2 through 6 can pretty much be summed up in So this is what I wrote at the end of day 1. My rations are already very low. I was not prepared for this. I'm the kind of person that will snack on Cheez-Its and trail mix throughout the day. But now I can't do that. Because I had to think of the freaking animals. Every time I'm around food, I just have to keep screaming, vegan, vegan, in my mind so I won't unconsciously take a handful of Cheez-Its. I went shopping for food today, and everything I wasn't allowed to eat looked super good. I was even craving the food that I've never bought before, like Hot Pockets. Who likes Hot Pockets? I accidentally bought bread that contained honey, which I don't know if that's vegan or not. If we've learned anything from the Bee Movie is that bees have no purpose if they're not making honey. I'm in for a long week. I'm already fantasizing about what I'll eat as soon as the challenge is over. I'm thinking of 4x4 from In-N-Out. I'll try to write tomorrow. And then after that long week was over, this is what I wrote for day 7. In a few hours, all my problems will be fixed, and I will be an immortal being. But I'm gonna throw that all away because tomorrow I'm gonna drink milk again. I've completed the vegan challenge, but I don't feel that accomplished. The best way I can think to describe what I'm feeling is, oh, it's over. I remember when I started the challenge, I was thinking about all the food I was going to eat once I was done, but now I'm just not craving anything. Still, though, I'm probably never going to do this again. While I was doing the challenge, I went to Sprouts and bought microwavable veggie burgers, and when I cooked them up, they smelled like throw-up. So see if you can tell how much I was trying to hold back throwing up in this video.
So today, we are going to try these veggie burgers, and as I was cooking it, it sort of smelled like throw-up. That almost made me throw up. So we have the burgers and tomatoes and lettuce. Oh, okay. I'm really hungry right now. This is a veggie burger. Okay. All right, I think. We're gonna try and eat this. Hopefully, tastes better than it smells.
By the way, that was vegan cheese in the video. I didn't just put normal cheese on the veggie burger, guys. Okay, I'm not a heartless creature. I care about cows. You know, the internet really loves to just hate on vegans. But I don't think it's as bad as the internet makes it out to be. Of course, there will always be jerks in any group of people. And you shouldn't think that you're better than someone else just because of what you eat. Also, I want to mention that while I did the vegan challenge, I would lose my breath just by going up the stairs. Some vegans would probably say that I was malnourished. And I probably was. This video is probably going to get some downvotes from some angry vegans, even though I'm about to compliment them. I think it takes a lot of self-control to do what vegans do. I don't know why anyone would purposely do that. I admire anyone that puts so much care and thought into their diet. I mean, ever since the challenge was finished, I've been trying to eat healthier, and I don't want to brag or anything, but I bought whole wheat waffles the other day, so I can feel my bones getting stronger. So, in conclusion, unfortunately, the 7-day vegan challenge, baby, solves all your problems. Did not solve all my problems. But even if it did solve all my problems, I still probably wouldn't be vegan. I would still drink milk. You know, because that's what makes ice cream and cheese and nachos. You think I'm exaggerating, but no, you would have to pay me a very pretty penny to get me to be full vegan. Like, no joke, a minimum of $1 billion. Am I glad I did the 7-day vegan challenge? Yes, I am.
Then we got some organic pancake syrup. I think pancake syrup itself is organic too, but we're just going to eat it again. Look, where does it say it? Non-GMO. 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 I haven't had a GMO in days.
And action.
So, Mr. James,
is it rolling?
Yes.
And action.
So, Mr. James, is it true that you wrote a book?
Oh, that thing? Yes, the rumors are true. One afternoon, I was just thinking to myself, why aren't I a published author yet? So I just jotted down some notes and doodles, and then I thought, you know, people should pay money for this.
So, like, it's just a bunch of pictures?
No, I added words, too. It's a collection of stories and opinions of mine, some of which I've already made into videos, and some that are completely original new stories. Like, one chapter is all about the science fair, and yeah, it is the same story I used in the YouTube video, but I also go more in-depth with the story, and I draw new pictures.
YouTubers have a reputation of writing bad books. Does this concern you?
Oh, bad books, huh? I'll have you know that my book was the number one best-selling book in literature, criticism, and theory. Do I know what that means? No. But did I beat Tyrant? Shakespeare on Politics? Yes. Does that mean I'm better than William Shakespeare himself? I'll let you be the judge when you pick up your copy of the book, link in the description.
I'll give you a clue. The answer is yes. Are all authors as condescending as you?
Do you even know what that word means?
James, is there anything special that happens to people who order at VidCon?
Yeah, the people who pre-order at VidCon get a signed copy.
What about people who aren't going to VidCon?
Sucks to be them.
Cut! Come on.
Haha, that was a good joke. So I actually am going to be selling signed copies. I'll be signing the first 1,000 copies to people who pre-order the book on my website. Check the link in the description. Also, speaking of my site, I've revamped the whole thing and got a bunch of new merchandise. Check it out if you have some free time. Christmas is right around the corner, guys. There's also non-signed copies available if you just want to pre-order it regularly. Or you can wait until August when the book comes out and buy it at Barnes & Noble or your local bookstore. And depending on how well these signed copies sell, I'll release more. We'll see. If you're interested, then I'll update everything on Twitter, so follow me on Twitter to be updated. Anyway, authors sure can be stuck up sometimes. Like this one time when this pretty well-established author was coming to my town and was doing a signing. I say well-established, but I'm sure if I said his name, you guys wouldn't actually know who he is. Anyway, at his signing, he gave an hour-long talk, and he said he wasn't going to do a Q&A segment because he said he'd been an author for so long that he felt that he already answered every question ever. Okay, Mr. Yahoo Answers, sorry our questions bothered you so much. And then after you listen to him talk, you gotta go up to meet him to get a book signed, but he was the most stereotypical, I'm too good for you celebrity I've ever seen. When you got to his table, he didn't say anything to you, and if you wanted a picture, he wouldn't even look up at the camera. So my family has this picture of all of us standing and smiling next to this guy, just looking down, reading a book. So I will follow in that author's footsteps and only take pictures with fans while signing my book and looking like this. Contrast to that when I met Stephen Pastis. Pastis? I just should have looked up how to say it. He's the creator of a comic strip called Pearls Before Swine, and all you need to know is that his comics are in the newspaper and he's really great. He came to visit Arizona and I was 15 at the time, so I was making stick figure comics, and I wanted to impress Stephen, so I got out my ruler and protractor and I very carefully drew this comic. How was your run? Well, let's just say Justin is all pooped out.
What happened? I don't want to talk about it.
Get it? He pooped his pants. This isn't based off anything in real life, okay? I was 15. Shut up.
I went to his book signing. He was really awesome. I showed him my comic. He laughed and he told me to keep going. And now I'm a YouTuber.
I mean, it wasn't just what he said that got me into doing comics and YouTube. I wanted to do that way before I met him. Anyway, he was nice.
Ironically enough, I was never a fan of reading, and I think a big part of it was that teachers forced you to read books you didn't want to read. So if this book becomes the next Romeo and Juliet or Grapes of Wrath, and teachers make their students write book reports on this book, then I'll make it easy for all of you. In the description of this video, I will create an already completed book report for this book. Now, I know what some of you are thinking.
James, won't the teachers know if all the book reports are the same?
Yes, they will, which is why I added some blank spaces for you to put in your own words. It's sort of like a Mad Lib that you turn in for homework.
And this book report doesn't even have to be on my book. You can use it for any book.
So if you have a book report due tomorrow, then check the link in the description. Trust me, you'll get...
At least an 80%. You know, the people who already pre-ordered this book are pretty ballsy. They don't even know what this book's about. For all they know, it could have just been a single picture of me laughing at all the money they gave me. But it's not that. I promise. That's just the inside sleeve. And that's the end of the video, everyone. I'll see you at VidCon.
Hey there, Frederick. What you doing? Oh, hello, brother of mine. Why, I'm just studying for a math test tomorrow. That's pretty neat, Frederick. Braxton, brother, shouldn't you also be studying for the test? Well, you see, Frederick, due to my high levels of apathy and the stress of knowing that I'll never be good at math, I've decided to completely give up on even trying to do good on the test.
So, what are you gonna do instead?
Oh, I'm just gonna go watch some YouTube videos.
School sucks! Especially math! Ugh!
When will I ever use geometry / trigonometry / calculus in the real world?
I think you're only saying that because you're bad at geometry / trigonometry / calculus. Why is everyone so quick to hate on math? Math is easy. How many essays did you have to write for math class? Oh, that's right. E to the I pi plus 1. Which is 0.
One thing I would change about math class is I think it's dumb that you have to show your work.
Ugh! Do you know how much harder it is to cheat when you have to show your work?
Dear math, solve your own problems, tweeted MatPat.
I hate Matt, replied Protato Gamer.
Hey, that's not very nice of you, Protay. All he did was tweet about math.
Maybe what you really hate is spelling.
Or maybe you really do hate MatPat.
Well, two can play at this game. When will I ever need to know about the themes and symbolisms in To Kill a Mockingbird when I go into the real world?
That's right, never!
You don't need to know anything to be in the real world.
Okay, I think we can all agree that a lot of what school teaches you isn't that important. And there's definitely more important things schools could be teaching you, like taxes or how to pick a good president. But I'm not the one who makes the curriculum, so why am I even talking about it?
Regardless of how broken your education system is, you should always stay in school, kids. Right, Dave? I was a good student in school, not counting college. And look how I turned out. I'm not using everything I learned in school almost every day. Sure, you'll probably never need to know that much about Shakespeare's plays. But hey, now you know how to read old-timey complicated books. And no, you'll probably never have to find the area under a curve ever. But now you can say that you can. And isn't that what life's all about? So enough with this introduction. I'm going to be telling you all some of my school stories.
What do you mean Jaden already made a video on school stories?
Did she call them school stories?
I already stole from her like 2 videos ago.
Okay, just, I'll think of something. So enough with this introduction. I'm going to be telling you all some of my academy anecdotes. So you know how guys can pee standing up? It's amazing. Ladies, if you've never peed standing up, then you're missing out. But there are some rules that apply with having the superpower. Like, don't go to a urinal right next to another guy unless it's absolutely necessary. Or, if the urinals don't have a divider, then everyone can all agree to keep your eyes and mind straight. These rules have been taught to us at a very young age. By the time we were in elementary school, we were all pros at peeing. Except for some of us when we were asleep. But that's not important. So at this point in life, we all should have known what we were doing. But there is this one kid who I guess no one ever taught him how to pee correctly. This kid, I'm not going to say his race because it doesn't matter, but when he went to the bathroom, he would pull his pants and underwear all the way down to the ground. Some of the ladies watching this might be thinking, wait, is that not how guys pee? Ladies, you'll just have to trust me on this, but that is the most wrong way a person can pee. The first time I saw the kid doing this was when I was in the urinal right next to him.